My podcast today, I am so pleased and excited because I'm with a dear friend, but doesn't matter about her being a dear friend. I respect and admire her work ethic. I've known her for years. We're going to have a look at the journey she's been on. She is a PR, but she's not just a PR. She's Carolyn Hughes PR, who has seen people come and go, and she's still here. We're going to look at the history of what's been happening, how important PR is, because this is what annoys me, and this is why I want to do the interview. When new places open, people don't realize how essential it is to get word out about a venue, and also to keep word out, especially in the world we're living in right now. So I am delighted to sit opposite in her beautiful home, my lovely friend, Carolyn Hughes, who I am a great fan of, as you know. Thank you for joining me.
Well, what an introduction that is. I'm not sure I can follow that, so thank you very much.
I meant it from my heart. Let's start right at the beginning, because the groundwork you had for being who you are today is got to start with Radio City, hasn't it?
I think it did start at Radio City, to be honest with you, because that was, in terms of my career path, that was sort of like my big break into something new, sexy, vibrant, all of those things that we would all like to forge a career in. It was at a time when radio was absolutely monumentally massive. Everybody listened to it. They listened to it at home. They listened to it in the car, pre-phone days. It was massive. You know, if you wanted to know anything, you turned on your local radio station.
But it was brand new, wasn't it? This was really exciting. Terry Smith, who was head of these, all these famous people had bought into it, and you were the right-hand man. Tell us what you did at City.
Well, I started off at Radio City sort of secretarially, really, but then with the advent of technology, obviously everybody's roles were continually changing. You know, initially there would be a massive commercial production department, then obviously technology would advance and that would be reduced, and it was a constantly movable feast, really. Technology just kept changing. I think when I first started, they used to have a record library and go and pick the records. So, you know, obviously that all became digital. You know, we used to have bands that would come in for interviews before ISDN lines were installed, which gave you digital quality to broadcastable digital quality. I do remember actually sitting in my office one day and a really
at the top of the building
next to a really good friend of mine, Molly Marshall, and I remember one day one of the lads from programming said, can you get those lads a cup of tea outside or something? So I did go and make a cup of tea. I don't mind making a cup of tea, Pete. I'll make a cup of tea for anybody. And I walked out to give them the tea. And as I walked out, they were sitting there with their feet on the coffee table, you know, outside in the waiting room. So I knocked all the feet off the coffee table, as you do, and asked them if they'd do that at home. Then sort of put Top of the Pops on the Thursday night, and then saw this new band who'd been into the radio station. And yes, it was Take That. So I did knock all the feet off the coffee table in my Radio City days.
What was also exciting, Carolyn, and this, I'm getting goose pimples talking about it because I came in later on into City. But what was also exciting, because this morning was going from the Albert Dock, we were getting every major star.
Every major star came, absolutely, all of them. Some now we wouldn't have wanted through the doors, I have to say, no names mentioned. But yes, we did get absolutely everybody. Radio at the time, Peter, was just massive. You know, I go back, I think my marker for how big it was will always be Hillsborough for me. I remember when it happened, I remember I was at home. And it was pre the days, really, of everybody having a mobile. Well, it was pre the days of everyone having a mobile phone, so people couldn't get in touch with loved ones. And without being called by the station, absolutely every single member of staff went in to man the phones, to take the frantic calls. That was how highly regarded the radio stations were. You know, they were like a family friend.
Terry Smith was your boss, but he was also your friend, a good friend, him and his wife. Did he realise, because he was a journalist, he was no fool, he was a grumpy old man, I can say that because I loved him dearly, but what I want to say to you, did he realise the monster he was sitting on?
I think he did. I think he was always ahead of the curve on that ball, to be dead honest with you. And from my point of view, I just think working with him, he was a tough negotiator. He was very tough to work with. You know, I can't say he was the easiest to work with, but I class him as one of my dearest friends on the planet. And I always said to his wife, Pam, my lovely friend Pam, I always said that the last job I'll ever do for him would be his funeral, and I did. And that's, you know, that's how far the friendship spanned. But he was a very tough negotiator.
He was indeed, and I always remember him saying to me every time he saw me, haven't I sacked you? Are you still here? And I actually think he meant it.
I'm sure he did, to be honest. I think I used to look at your file regularly. However, I do think your file spent more time on his desk than anybody else's, if I was to be honest with you. But I also do remember saying to him, because I used to look after everybody's... I used to look after the holiday chart. So everybody back in the day used to get 20 days holiday. So I always gave myself 25. And then he put everybody's holidays up to 25. So I put mine up to 30. And I did tell him in later life I did that. But I think he already knew, to be honest.
I'm talking to Carolyn Hughes. We're talking about the early days first off at Radio City. The other thing is, before we put City to bed, you all at City created new stars. The presenters, the journalists, the newsreaders, stars were created.
I think back in the day as well, obviously you've got to remember news was massive. We didn't have the news platforms that we have now and the constant role in news that we have now. So the newsroom, especially with Terry being a journalist, was hugely important to him. He was also the chairman of IRN, which is Independent Radio News, which supplied all the other radio stations with the news output. So, you know, he might have had his own radio station, but, you know, he was a journalist at heart until the day he died. Massively. Because he was a journalist, he always felt passionately with Liverpool having two football teams. That one of the things he was massively, he fought for constantly when he was fighting for budgets and everything, was to keep commentary on the radio stations for as long as possible, which he did until it became literally untenable. Until they were sold and it became untenable. And so many of today's sporting, you know, pundits, broadcasters, they all started at Radio City, you know, Graham Beecroft, Steve Bauer, you know, I could name loads of them. They all started at Radio City.
You must have the most amazing black book of phone numbers.
It's funny, actually, because even... if they've passed away, I can't take them out of my phone. You know, like you, I still have Phil Easton's number in my phone. I still have so many old friends and colleagues. Yeah, the numbers are still in my phone, actually.
So when you're sitting there with the boss, working, watching the station grow and grow, which it did, it became humongous, amazing. That was so wonderful to be part of it for me. Where was PR? Was it in your head? Were you thinking?
I think the thing with PR is you're doing PR when you don't realise you're doing PR. You know, I was always selling the radio station without realising I was selling the radio station. And then, as I say, with the advent of technology, you know, we no longer had to do shorthand to take notes of board meetings. You know, all of a sudden I'd be typing them on a laptop, so you'd have a larger part of your day free. So I kind of moved into doing some events for Radio City then, for the marketing department. So I started building my black book and doing events for the charity and the marketing department, basically to promote the radio station.
Was there one day you said, I'm leaving?
No, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like that at all, to be fair. It was my nosiness. I was working for a different MD, actually, at the time. And I was being nosy and I was looking at the budgets for... we were about to present the budgets. And I always used to play a game with myself. I would look at the budgets and see if I could identify where the cuts would come. And I'd always go, yeah, you know, they might lose one in Comprod or they might lose one in sport or blah, blah, blah. And this particular day, it was screaming at me that I would be a massive saving. So I kind of looked at it and I thought, oh, my good God, I think it's going to be me. And, you know, I had a company car, I had private medical, was on a decent salary, you know, I got a bonus. We'd been bought by a large company, and it was the first time I realised I was a huge saving. I would have been a huge saving.
See, all the years I've known you, I've never known this. And this is why I wanted to interview Carolyn Hughes, who is now Carolyn Hughes PR. So that's great. Was it a big step, though, when you found out?
It was a shock. Honestly, let me be absolutely clear as anything. I never wanted to leave Radio City, but when I sat down and I looked at the budget and I said to the MD at the time, you know, I can see, it's glaringly obvious that, you know, a conversation that could be coming at some time in the future. And they'd also just signed a deal to move into the Radio City Tower, which is obviously St John's. And I kind of realistically sat back and looked at it. I think I was 36, 37 at the time. And I thought, if I leave it till next year, you know, I can sort of blag myself another year to stay at Radio City. But the amount of expenditure they were incurring to move themselves from Stanley Street into the Tower, I knew was huge. I knew the following year's redundancies were going to be way bigger than this year's redundancies. So I kind of got my head round that if ever there was a time for me to go and get the payoff I wanted, I'd have got a better payoff by doing it sharpish rather than dragging it out for another year.
Did you look at other ideas, or was it always going to be PR?
Well, it was funny because I had done a little moonlight where I'd been introduced to by a really good friend of mine, Rob Smith, who was doing some advertising for us, some branding and advertising for Radio City. And I'd been introduced to Dave Hines and the legendary, absolute legendary, Tim Bacon. So, who were opening Life Cafe on... where was Life Cafe? Opposite Albert Schloss. Bell Street. Thank you, Bell Street.
Mental blocks.
Mental block. And they were opening that. So they said to me, will you help us do the launch? So I sort of did this launch, which I could have done with my eyes shut. And back in the day, got like a cheque for like £3,000. And I thought, oh, this PR, this is all right, this business.
Well, let me stop you there, because when I was a chef, I was earning, before you were born, 15 quid a week. Then I got a job as a DJ, earning 25 quid a week. So I know exactly what you mean.
Well, I did this job, and it was kind of, invite everyone you know for a great free night out, blah, 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 and get paid. So when I realised that, obviously, my name was screaming at me off the budget, off the Excel sheet.
Yeah.
I spoke to my friends and they said, right, just leave, start up on your own. We're your first client. I said, well, I'm not sure about that. You know, ever the pessimist, I thought, I'm really not sure about that.
Plus also you're self-employed.
Self-employed, first time self-employed. And they said, look, what are you worried about? You know, how much do you earn at all? And they said, well, we're going to give you that and we're going to give you the freedom to go and look for other stuff. I went, well, it's a no-brainer, really. I think for the first 6 months, I still got the Echo on a Thursday to look at the job section, just in case. But I've never applied for a job since the day I left Radio City.
I understand that. But the most amazing thing is, after being in the launch of Radio City, which was so powerful, you were there, you were part of it, you then just mentioned Living Ventures, which was the most powerful, in my opinion, and I know you'll agree with me, the most powerful company in this city that changed this city forever, with venues that were a magic to get into, were incredible, and you did the PR. So not only did you have that chunk of city, you had the chunk of going in, the first job, one of the best.
Oh, that was just legendary, to be honest, because I think they were so ahead of the curve in terms of the way they thought about leisure. Tim was a risk taker. He was, you know, similarly, he wasn't the easiest. Sometimes he could be quite forceful. But to be honest, I think the fact that I'd worked with Terry Smith for so long, who, you know, he, I think I think one of the best things Terry ever said to me was, he said to me, I'll never bollock you for making a mistake. I will bollock you for not making a decision. He said, if you make the wrong decision for the right reasons, I'll always support you. And I've kind of lived with that throughout my life. I think if I make a decision and I justify my decision in my head and I think it's right and I can defend that decision, I think those two men gave me the confidence to actually, they're the foundations for my business anyway.
Dave and Tim.
Dave, Tim, Terry, probably. Yeah. Dave, Tim.
So the three men in your life. Now, was there many people doing PR in the early days?
No, back in the day, not really, to be dead honest with you. Back in the day, it was fairly new. You know, there were a few agencies round and about, relying largely on printed press magazines, you know, radio, television, printed press magazines. So I sort of had a baptism of fire. I was very lucky because I had a few friends who worked in the local newspapers, local magazines, who...
And you had your own column.
Oh, I did have my own column for 16 years, thanks to Ali McRae, actually. But I also had some really good mates in the Echo at the time who, if I didn't quite hit the mark with a press release, they'd guide me, teach me and show me how to do it better. They never once made me feel stupid or, you know... So I was very lucky. I had some good support at the start.
Callum, before we go any further with this, what is a good PR? Because there will be people out there that don't realise how important and what a backbone they set up for any company, because you now are right across the board with solicitors, all sorts of clients. What is a good PR?
I think when people open a venue or a business, I think they're so focused on getting the venue open, the operation open, and all the other things that go into it. For example, leisure. You know, a lot of people have put their life savings in. A lot of people have, you know, taken a big punt to open that business. And they get, you know, they think they've got everything right in terms of their offering. But if it's the best kept secret, it can be as good as you want it to be, but if you're not telling people about it, then there's only you that knows it's the best place in Liverpool. So I think for me, it's if a client gets me involved at an early stage, we can make sure that they hit the ground running. We can build the momentum. We can build the anticipation. We can sell it before it's even open, really. You know, especially nowadays with obviously the likes of digital technology that can show you what things are going to look like. So nowadays, you can literally, if you do it right, you can make a venue open and hit the ground running. None of this building it up and it takes 6 months and all of that. You know, if you do it right and you've got the time and they'll invest the time with you, you can open a business and for it to hit the ground running.
And that's interesting you say that, because this is where a lot of people don't understand what the business is about. It's a lot of hard work, a lot of sleepless nights, because you've got to come up with the goods. If you don't come up with the goods, you're out.
Well, it's funny because I have people saying to me on occasions, what do you do for a living? Is it parties? And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's parties. That's all I do is parties. You know, they don't see the long hours. They don't see everything else that goes. PR covers so many parts of a business, so many parts of a business. I've always had one eye on an income stream as well. I've always had one eye on... you know, making myself a valuable asset to the company is really important to me. I kind of like them to feel like I am a really good asset. You know, I don't just do a rent a crowd for an opening. I will target my crowds for a launch or for an event for a particular venue and almost try and handpick people who I think will suit that brand. I think I'm not saying it's easy to do a launch. It's not easy to do a launch.
It's easier now you're older and you've done it for so long.
It is. And obviously you build that loyalty up with your clients, or you build that loyalty up with the people who you work with, you know, press influencers and bloggers. I try and make sure that, you know, I offer them a wide array of things and not always going back. I've always got something nice to offer. You know, I like to think if they open an email from me, they know it's going to be something decent, something good quality, something nice, something worth doing, or I wouldn't waste the time.
What's interesting also is, and I think one of the biggest measures of you, and this is one of the things I respect so much, is that you are so good at your job, most of your clients become friends, but it doesn't sway the fact that you're doing what you're doing. Watering can, a good example.
It to be honest, Pete, the watering can is a fantastic example of how PR fits into the venue. When Phil and Keith got in touch with me from the watering can, they were putting in for planning and they were having some negative local noise by people who didn't necessarily want the calf there at the start. You know, they are fantastic operators. They are brilliant operators. I've worked with them for 3 years now. We've won 2 Liverpool City Region Tourism Awards, 2 Downtown Awards. We've been on Lab Bible. We have absolutely smashed that out the park.
And as we're speaking, they're up for another couple of awards.
And they are up for another couple of awards. But the interesting thing about this is they were doing very well and they were very good operators. Some people have this misconception that you only get in touch with the PR person if you desperately need bums on seats. Now, the reason they got in touch with me was completely different. They were a busy cafe, a really busy cafe. But when we looked at it, obviously, one, we had to dampen the negative noise surrounding the planning application. And we did that by just making sure we were great operators, you know, winning tourism awards that were voted for by the public. You know, they litter pick the park 3 times a week. You know, we work with Liverpool Cares. We did stuff in the community. We literally worked incredibly hard to change the perception by a lot of people and get a lot of people on board. They're great operators. But also what we looked at, because they were doing well, we looked at areas where we could increase revenue. And increased revenue was maybe getting more people who would come for lunch instead of coffee and cake. Not that we don't want the people who have coffee and cake. We love people coming in for coffee and cake. And people now travel further, stay longer, spend more. So that's a really good example of how a PR person isn't necessarily just for your launch.
Let me stop you there, because the reason I wanted to mention them as well, you also are 24/7. They can pick a phone up to you anytime they want. That's because you take that job that much seriously.
I do. I think as time's moved on, I think our lifestyles are more 24/7 now. You know, we're permanently, I am permanently attached to my phone. So I think it's not necessarily that they think I'm on call 24/7. It's just, it's easy to send a WhatsApp because sometimes you think, well, they'll pick it up in the morning or whatever. But I think our lifestyles are so much more immediate now that that's why people assume you're available 24/7.
Carolyn, you're very honest, and that's one thing I love about you, and that's why our friendship is very... It's good friendship. It's great, but we're both very honest with each other. Was it a major problem, and you're very technical-minded now, but was it a major problem when social media and everything changed? Because I remember, totally different animal than you, but I remember when I was at Radio City and we stopped using CDs and it was all technical. I remember having the engineer pinned against the wall saying, if you talk down to me one more time, I will punch your lights out. But tell me, was it a big, whoa, what's going on?
I'm obsessed with social media. So for me, it absolutely wasn't, no. I embrace social media. I love it. I think the internet is the best invention in the world and the worst invention in the world in equal measure. In many ways, it's made my job easier. And in other ways, it's made it much harder. In as much as it's a lot easier to get your message out if you're launching a brand or a venue or whatever it may be, an event. It's also, there are also many platforms that can pull you down as much as they can build you up. So, you know, swings and roundabouts, I think. I mean, I love social media. I really, you know, I embrace it. I spend way too much time on it and I love it.
I am very fortunate and very proud to be the host of your Christmas soiree, which has now been going for a long time. People have no idea. And for those people who are listening and don't know, I'm talking to Carolyn Hughes PR, but this do at the Hilton, it never used to be at the Hilton, it's at the Hilton now, but this do is the most remarkable. It's not Christmas without Carolyn Hughes PR at this unbelievable event that sells out easily by May, if not before. But people don't understand the work that goes in, do they?
It's really funny, isn't it, Pete? Because some days I can walk into the kitchen and sort of not remember what I've walked into the kitchen for. But you know, when I'm doing an event, I can remember who's allergic to mushrooms and who doesn't like tomatoes. That Christmas lunch has just literally developed legs of its own. I've about 310 last year, I think, 310. Start at midday-ish. People arrive from 11:30-ish. You know, full glitter arty, full blow dry.
From all over the country now?
From all over the place. From literally all over the place. I have minibuses pull up. We have, barristers, lawyers, you know, accountants, the who's who of Liverpool. It's a fun day. You know it's a fun day.
But they arrive to party. Oh, it's God. Now got a name for itself, and it is Christmas.
It is beyond... I think I'm the first person to leave every year. I leave when the women start crying. The first time I see a crier, or if anyone looks like they're going to be a vomiter, to be honest.
You're off.
Yeah, I'm off. Last year I did. I've had it at the Hilton the last few years. I mean, that lunch over the years has made hundreds of thousands of pounds for charities. And over the last few years, we've supported the food banks, which both of us felt it was the right thing to do, didn't we?
And people were so generous.
They were so generous. You know, it's got a complete life of its own. I wish I could go as a guest.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. And on the strength of that... You were the only one that threw the biggest party when the Eurovision was on. We were right in the centre of town, right in the middle of it. And that went on forever.
I think that was a tough one to do that, you know, Pete. I thought you did. And I'm not just saying it because I'm with you. I've said it to you many times before. You hosted that, I think, from 6 till midnight. Mm. Am I right? And you arrived earlier than that to do a sound check. I think that was a really tough gig for me, you and everybody else, because I felt like half the people in the room really were into the Eurovision. I'm not particularly. And I felt like the other half...
And I wasn't as well.
And you weren't as well. But I felt the other half of the people in the room literally just wanted to be in Liverpool to say I was in Liverpool on the night of Eurovision.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. So I felt like that was quite a tough gig, and I thought you did it really well, especially considering we didn't do very well, and we weren't doing well in the voting. So to still hold people's attention when, you know, the reason we're there, it's perfectly clear, you know, we're getting nil point again.
Cal, you've seen, and I say that fondly, Cal, Carolyn Hughes, Cal, you've seen people come and go in the PR because a lot of people think it's an easy job, and we don't have to mention names at all, but you've seen them come and go.
Do you know, I feel like there are some great PR people in the city at the moment, really talented, really fantastic PR people. But if I look around, everyone's got their own little edge doing something a bit different. You know, I feel like we've all got our own little edge. And Pete, honestly, I genuinely believe there is room in the city for everybody. There's enough work to go around. We all get on really well. You know, we all try and support each other where we can. You know, it's not often I'm out and I hear anything negative about another PR person. So I think it's a really good network of PR people we have in the city. We know a lot of very, very talented people.
Carolyn Hughes, you are a Scouser. Tell me why you love Liverpool so much.
Why do I love Liverpool so much? I suppose because it's home, and it's, you know, my days at Radio. It's funny, isn't it? I look back at my days at Radio City and it was 13 years. Now, 13 years when I left seemed like an awful long time, and obviously 13 years is a long time. And I didn't want to leave, and I still look back on those days really fondly. But I think being part of Radio City made me just appreciate the city so much from quite a young age. You know, I saw the best of humanity through the Radio City lens, probably the worst of humanity as well through the Radio City lens. But I think even when something really bad happened in the city, it just brought out so much good from the city. You know, we are a city united, and we are a very unique city.
Carolyn, to finish off, and I've just taken half an hour of your time, and I could do it over and over again because I love you so much and I respect and admire you so much. For people who don't understand how important PR is for people who are listening now, who maybe are starting a business and putting the business together and thinking, well, I've got no money to pay. But it is important, isn't it?
I think the right PR person pays for themselves, to be honest with you, Peter. Well, I'd certainly like to think I do with my clients. I think the right PR person literally does pay for themselves. Also, it's not all about launches, parties, events. I had a client on Berry Street who had a bar. It was the Red Door, actually. And there'd been a stabbing or something locally. And then in the press was a picture of Berry Street, but the main picture on Berry Street was the Red Door, which made it look like the stabbing had happened, you know, at the bar, which it hadn't. So obviously then you jump in and you say, look, is there any way you can find a more generic picture if you don't mind? You know, that could be misleading and look as if it blah, 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 blah. I've had it where clients have, you know, had accusations of maybe a spike in. We've gone back over the CCTV and categorically there hasn't been, you know, so we've put together a whole package there to make sure that, you know, we're all, you know, we've ticked all our boxes. So it's way more than, you know, a glossy launch or, you know, popping of the champagne corks. You know, sometimes it can be sort of fairly nitty gritty. Sometimes, you know, it's like saying to clients, we're not quite there yet. We're getting people in, but we're not wowing them. Or, you know, it can be a whole array of areas that you cover. Some conversations you have to have aren't always the easiest. You know, sometimes, you know, as a PR person, I feel a moral and professional responsibility to be brutally honest with my clients, you know, because it's their livelihood, it's their investment, it's their time. And it's their risk, you know, and I'm there to make sure that they achieve their dreams, their goals, their aspirations. So if I can't be honest with them and I've got their ear, I'm not doing my job properly, am I?
Absolutely. Now, those examples you gave were great, because what I love about what you just said then about the stabbing, about the spiking, about going back and doing all that, what I love about that is that's the knowledge you've got of over the years.
But I think also as well, in terms of good PR or in terms of being a valuable asset as a PR person, you do need those contacts that you can call upon. You know, I have worked really hard to make sure that my phone, that I can connect with the people I need to connect with on behalf of my clients. You know, if I do need to call an editor, I'm happy to call an editor. If I do need to call a politician, I'm happy to call a politician. You know, I've normally got those numbers in my phone. I think if you provide a rounded PR service, as well as the glitzy side and making sure you get, you know, all the nice reels and, you know, all the lovely shots from your launch, you've also got to have, you know, in your locker somewhere, you've got to be able to pull out all the other stuff, because I'll guarantee you at some point your client's going to need more than, you know, champagne corks popping. You know, at some point they are going to need something a little bit more gritty in terms of assistance.
I've watched you grow. I've watched you come to who you are today. I know a lot of your clients. I know a lot of the businesses. You are not a vain person at all, never have been. And you, in fact, you talk yourself down, which really annoys all of us that love you. But I will say now, you have turned some businesses around amazingly. And it's not just entertainment. It's solicitors, barristers, businesses of all sorts. So I can't congratulate you enough. I think you're an amazing woman. I'm thrilled you've come on my podcast, because I think it's a fascinating subject. PR is a fascinating subject. And you've also gone in, because of your knowledge, and turned businesses around, which has been great, where they've had problems and they've come to you and said, can you help? And you went, ain't going to be easy.
But I think it takes a certain type of business owner to say, excuse me, I've got a problem. And I quite admire people who can say, excuse me, I've got a problem. Because normally if they identify that they've got a problem, they're open to fixing that problem. Mm-hmm. The hardest ones are the ones who think they're getting everything right. And you're trying to tell them, actually, you're not. Yeah. Which I do. You know, I will say, I don't agree. But in terms of turning businesses around, as I say, I think in terms of PR, I think if you are good at what you do, there's always a job for you in PR. You know, if I'm working with a client and they've just smashed and had the best year yet, the next conversation I'll be having with them is, how do we beat that next year? What awards did you win this year? What awards can we win next year? How much did we make this year? what percentage do you want to add on to your turnover? Especially post-pandemic, Pete, when most of the leisure sites closed. You know, that was really, really tough recovering from that. But I think a good, rounded PR person isn't just there for the party. They're there when the party poppers have fizzled and the champagne's gone flat, the photos have been distributed, and then the real work starts. I feel like the real work starts once the glitz and glamour's gone, to be honest with you.
Thank you so much for joining us on our podcast. Why not subscribe? You know it's free. So join us and tell your friends. It's great going on walks and doing whatever you want to do and then putting Pete Price on. We've got a back catalogue of over 100 interviews. Join us. Subscribe. It's free.